Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Moving Train Radio. This is Jeff in New Jersey with Heidi and Dave in Minnesota, and we've got a cornucopia of things to talk about. We'll probably end up zeroing in on maybe one or two things. There's a couple of big things in the news. In case you don't have watched CNN or never heard of CNN, there was a plane crash in Germany. There's a new law passed in Indiana, the so-called religious freedom law. And I got to give props to Scott Kelly at CBS News for calling it the so-called religious freedom law and not the religious freedom law that the liberal media is so dutifully calling it. And he also made a snarky comment at the end that the bill has 832 words, and the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment has 16 words. And he said Indiana's going to clarify it by adding more words, and he suggested maybe they should use a quill. So he plus a little bit of opinion. It's kind of why, I mean, CBS News is still the downfall of 60 Minutes, which really isn't what it used to be. I think there's still the gold standard in news. You could agree or disagree with me on that. Okay, a shout-out. Shout-out to our own Dave Blavins, the president of the Minnesota or Greater, is it the Greater Minneapolis or Minnesota chapter?
Greater Minnesota.
Chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. He was on, I just cannot say the name of the network, the Channel 9 News in Minneapolis. He spoke on the topic of suicide prevention, of which he has a deeply personal connection and is very actively involved. And is the link up yet on the website? I checked the website just now. I couldn't find it anywhere.
They're trying to find the link, and I emailed the producer who I was working with yesterday, and he's not gotten back to me, but I'm hoping if I can get the link or the video there. So I think I'll share it.
Okay, if we can get the link, we'll put it up.
I was going to point out that the station question, they run their website and their Facebook page a little bit differently and a little less open, probably the way I could say it, than the other stations in the area where literally they post, you can find anything. Like if they have they found a lost dog, you can find it on their website or find it on their Facebook page. This particular channel is a little bit less open, and so I think that they don't post everything for some reason, so I think he has to just get him to send him the clip, which seems ridiculous, but that seems to be what's going on.
Yeah, I looked at the actual TV station website where they have, looks like they've got some past videos archived, so it might be just a matter of time and to get it loaded.
Yeah.
Maybe it takes a day or so.
I just know that most of the other channels in town take much less time, so I don't know. It's one of the less watched channels in the area, and sometimes they might take a little more time because they have less people working there. It should be hopefully soon.
All right. I just want to talk about one thing before we get started. My weekly rant. This is just something really weird that happened. As some of you who know me know, I like to complain about things on Twitter, and if I feel like I've been wronged by a a company, I take to Twitter and I try to seek relief that way. And I've been successful quite often. And my most recent conquest being Outback Steakhouse. But I had put out threw out the question, how can I go down my Twitter timeline? How can I hop down my Twitter timeline? Because I had stuff going back to like 2009, and I didn't want to go all the way down the feed, because I wanted to post a couple of screen caps of some of my tweets. So I went down and I found something about Scott's Lawn Service, you know, which I used to have, and I had a problem with them, and I screen capped it, and I posted it on my page called Tweet Fighting Man, which is something I just started, that I'm going to use as my complaining Twitter account, and I'm going to also use it to do it on behalf of other people. So if anybody has a gripe, they can just contact Tweet Fighting Man, and he'll fight for you against corporations. So anyway, this is a Thursday, and I put the thing up, and then about 5 minutes later, my phone rings, my landline, and it was a number I didn't recognize, and it had a weird name on the thing, and I picked it up, and it's this guy with I don't know if it was a British or a Scottish accent, saying, hello, this is Ron from Scott's Lawn Service. You need to pay your bill. I said, well, you know, I don't owe you any money. He said, oh, yes, you do. We have the bill, and it hasn't been paid. I said, okay, well, prove it. He goes, well, I can't prove it right now. I said, well, send me the bill. And he goes, well, we hung the bill on your door. And I said, look, I know you're not from Scott's Lawn Service. He goes, oh, yes, I am. I said, well, prove it. He goes, well, how do you expect me to prove it? And then I said, this is about 9:30, and I said, by the way, you know you're breaking the law. Then a female voice jumps in and says, no, he's not. This isn't a sales call. And I said, well, I know it's not a sales call. You're attempting to collect the debt, right? And he said, yes. I said, okay, well, according to the Fair Credit and Collections Act, it's against the law to call somebody after 9 o'clock p.m. So you're breaking the law. He goes, well, you can't afford to sue us. I said, well, first of all, I can afford to sue you. But second, I'm not going to sue you. I'm going to have you prosecuted because you're breaking the law. And by that time, I had already Googled phone number. I said, it was Bakersfield, California. I said, I'm going to contact the California U.S. attorney and have you prosecuted for interstate violations of law. And then he started like, you know, then I had enough, so I hung up, you know. And then the phone rang again. I said, I let it go to voicemail. And it's the same guy, and he goes, oh, this is Ron from Scott's Lawn Service. You really need to pay your bill, and I'm really tired of your fucking shit. And if you don't pay this bill, I'm going to fuck you up. So I recorded the voicemail and made a video out of it, and I posted it. And then about 5 minutes later, the same phone number comes up again on my phone. And I didn't pick it up. because I knew he was going to leave a voicemail, and I knew I was going to record it and post it. And he goes, "Hello, this is Scott. Same guy, same phone number, same guy. This is Scott from Outback Steakhouse. We're sick and tired of you complaining about us. Yo, we comped your meal. I don't know what more you want. I'm really sick and tired of your fucking shit. And I need you to take your fucking website down." I posted that too. And then the next day, I had finally got a response from Comcast on a problem I had with them last week, and I posted on Please Fighting Man. Comcast has its own Twitter handle called Comcast Cares. So I wrote, you know, maybe Comcast cares after all, and I had my copy of my if you go on one of those Twitter search things and put in Comcast, you suck, you get like 1,000 results. Right, Comcast suck on Twitter. But
oh, hilarious.
That night, the phone rang again. This time it was a female voice saying, "This is from, I'm from Comcast Cares." And I said, "No, you're not." And I hung up. And it was the same phone number. But she didn't call back and leave a voicemail because I guess they knew I was gonna record it.
What the hell?
So, like, what I don't understand is why. I mean, if I was 12 years old, I would, I would troll because I would troll, complaint things and bother people. You know, that's something I would have done when I was in like the fifth or sixth grade with my friends. But, you know, an adult, you know. And then when I Googled the phone number, sometimes when you Google these, like, 800, unknown 800 numbers, but this wasn't an 800 number. It was a regular area code. There's whocalledme.com or something, and it's just like a discussion board where people write down what the number was and what it was.
Right.
Most of the time, it was that number was somebody calling, saying they're from Microsoft and they notice a problem with your Windows and they need you to do, you know, a certain thing so they can log into your computer and fix it. So it seems to be like some like generic spoof. Spoof phone number.
Oh, yeah.
But then I had resolved my issues with Comcast, and I thanked them. I said, by the way, I said, you know, this number called me last night posing as Comcast. I wrote that in my direct message to Twitter, and then when I got home, I got a voicemail from not Comcast customer service, but Comcast security saying, we got your message and we looked into the number. And you know, we've confirmed, because I get my landline through Comcast, so we've been able to confirm that you've got about a half a dozen calls from that number, so we're going to investigate it. So I just fucking dare them to try to cause. I found out that you dial *57, it'll trace like whatever the last call is. So I have two. If you have three, then you can take it to law enforcement. So I dare them to call me again. But they they never went on my page. They trolled my page. They lurked, is the better word. Trolling means commenting. They're lurking on my page. How they got it even came to their attention, I don't know. It had 30 likes last week, and it's mostly just people I know, and not a whole lot of activity and not a whole lot of Twitter activity. So I don't know what even attracted this individual or this pair of people to call me up and bother me for no reason, you know, just because they could. You know, and even took the time to look up Scott's Lawn Service phone number and he said, "This is Scott's Lawn Service. I demand you call me at," you know, he rattled off a number. And said, "If you don't pay this bill, I'm gonna fuck you up." You know, so
really?
So that's a number of laws have been broken. You know, first of all, that type of language, abusive language, and calling it off hours, and posing as the debt collector when you're really not. So, I mean, the odds of any chance of really prosecuting this guy are slim. But it was just weird. You know, I seem to attract this.
What the hell?
Well, I guess I invite it. You know, I bring it on myself.
It looks like Dave is holding.
Okay. First thing we have to ask Dave, once we put him on, is let's ask him if he's proud of his home, how proud he is of his home state.
Okay.
All right.
Which home state?
The one you were born in.
How the hell do you remember where I was born? Okay.
I don't remember. Yeah, you told me.
All right. Okay. First off, I don't think this foolishness in Indiana is worth anybody's discussion because it's obviously god awful. But that said, I lived in Indiana for 8 years, 0 to 8. When I went back, and then I went back for 2 months when I was 13 in 1961. Okay, I had no contact with the state or anybody from there till 2011, when somebody tracked me down through classmates. This is a kid I knew in eighth grade. And basically, it was, I don't know, good enough to go see my hometown after not being there for 50 years. So in 2011, I visited Enzensville, Indiana, and I stayed with my friend and his lovely second wife, who are as liberal as most of your listeners. So I just want to say that not everybody in Indiana is a moron, though certainly there seem to be a number of them. But it brings up a story that I hope I didn't tell you this. I remember I told my wife somewhat recently. So I'm visiting Indiana friends, who I've never met his wife, of course, till this time. We're out doing a Sunday morning walk. And for somehow, she brings up the fact that their acquaintance of theirs, who was a bit of a racist, which they condemn, had a daughter who married a black man. And Dennis's wife used that as proof positive that God had a sense of humor. So, and I just enjoyed that. The racist whose daughter married a black man shows God has a sense of humor. Okay. Quick comment on your earlier rant, Jeff. Because the person both first tried to fork you for money from Scott, and the same person mentioned the Outback complaint. Is there any possibility it's somebody you knew messing with you?
I thought that at first, but when I did some research on the phone number, that phone number is a well-known, widely used number that those Windows cameras use.
Because you mentioned the accent, and before you mentioned Bakersfield, all I could think of was Paul Hanahan got some guy to mess with you. But, probably not, though, if it was from Bakersfield.
I think if it was him, at some point he would have come clean. But this was not
I mean, these guys seem stupider than their average mark because, I mean, most criminals aren't as stupid as the people they play, they pry on. But
I don't know. I'm only wondering if he was if there was a way that he would, if I stayed on the phone, if they're some kind of a scam thing that they could grab my phone number and spoof it and use to, you know, call other people. You know how they do that? Like, you know, they use a third party number to contact people. But I haven't gotten any phone calls at all from somebody saying, "Hey, I got a call from this number. You know, what the hell are you doing?" So I don't know what the motivation was.
I don't know. And you know, if you dig deep enough into all of us, you know, there's some right winger somewhere. And if you dig deep in me, and I was doing this, and you would have told me that after 9 o'clock at night, I'm not allowed to collect my debt, I might have come back with, "Well, you're not allowed to pay your bills 24 hours a day. You choose not to pay your bills 24 hours a day." But that's just a little aside. I have very mixed feelings on, you know, dealing with people with poor credit over the years.
Yes.
And some people that, I mean, you get some people that obviously it's due to, you know, a medical issue, a tragedy, and a loss of job. And you get other people that just don't fucking pay their bills because they're too absent-minded or too lazy or just don't fucking care. I mean, there's a wide spectrum on that. But that's a little rant of my own.
My first job was in collections. And you're right. There's the people that, you know, because some tragedy, some job loss are now in collections. Then there's the one to, like you said, fuck you, just don't care. They don't pay because they took the credit card or whatever it was to, just crazy on, you know, a weekend in Las Vegas, and they're not going to pay their bill. So, yeah.
The old auto business manager, you know, who is one of the most hated individuals in life, very seldom has said it. But the old thing is, when somebody with poor credit complains that the payment for their new car is so high, you come back with, "Well, you're not going to make it anyway. What's it matter what the payment is?" But you're really not supposed to do that stuff anymore. All right.
Well,
we probably should get on to something a little.
I've come to the conclusion that you guys are not really in the car sales business. You're in the finance business, because for my wife and me, it's a blood sport. To, you know, whenever it's time to buy a car, we both have platinum level credit, and we have we've had a good, you know, value trade in, and we've done our homework, and we've always been able to beat the system.
Give credit to our young general manager, who I've worked with for a number of years, and he said to me in the last 6 weeks that he wished the whole finance thing would eventually go away.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, "Well, you know, Seth, that sounds like something I'd say, where, you know, you make, you know, a lot of money off it, you know, in the store itself." And he goes, "Eventually, if it went away, you know, the prices on the cars and the deep discounts would go away to some degree, you know, and we could all make the same thing a lot less painfully."
But you don't really... You're not really selling the car; you're selling the payments. For everybody like us, you know, who goes in, with a plan that ends with, "Look, you know, there's only two outcomes here: either you give me the price I want, or I get up and walk away." You know,
yeah.
Your call. And then they usually come back with what I'm looking for. But for every one of those, you got other people that are looking at monthly payments, and they'll they'll settle for something that they think they can afford, and not even have any idea what the price of the car is that they bought. So, and that's true in other things too, like furniture, you know, mattresses, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, any kind of rent to own thing. Yeah, you're not selling the product, you're selling the, or the price, you're selling the monthly payments. Anyway,
well, as somebody that did it, but has a, you know, an old Lefto Pinko streak in him too, what I enjoyed most was, you know, making extra money off people that had money to burn. You know, that was always fun. That was fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you got somebody who doesn't care and they'll you could sell them a car for, you know, sell them all that, like the undercarriage protection and all that kind of stuff. That's great. Okay, Ms. Seide, what do you want to talk about next? Religious freedom in Indiana?
We could talk about that. We could talk about the German Wings plane with the co-pilot. We could talk about, one of those, I guess.
Let's start with Indiana and try to budget our time, and then because I want to, when we talk about the plane, I want to include Dave in that because I think that Dave's thing last night. I don't know if they asked you about it or not. I think
no, they did not.
The German plane crash. Besides just being a plane crash, it raises issues of workplace violence, red flags. Like, how do you know if somebody, you know, is in danger of taking their own life? How do you know if somebody is in danger of taking others with them? I mean, this German plane crash is very similar to somebody who snaps out a disgruntled employee and goes into a warehouse or an office and sprays them with bullets and then turns the gun on themselves. There's really no difference except for the weapon
That's
was
true.
Different and the level of terror different, and there were no survivors. So that's the way I see it.
Okay.
Yeah, but maybe we could dispatch this Indiana thing. You know, but I'll let you go ahead. Give me your take.
With the Indiana thing? So, you know, now, so, and we sort of talked about this earlier, that, you know, when Mike Pence did this and his whole big thing about, when he filed this, and or I should say signed the bill into law last week, you could tell that he was very happy, you know, it was a great thing, and he thought, you know, he was doing this, all this stuff for religious freedom. The problem is there was... Wait! Stop. Everybody stop. Sorry. So I'm talking about religious freedom, and my dogs go crazy. Sorry about that. when he signed the bill, he had a lot of people around him. You know, if you saw the picture, he had... nuns, and he had priests, and I think he had some other religious people there, but he also had he had three particular people behind him when he signed this law that are what you would consider very homophobic. They're very anti-gay, for lack of a better term, lobbyists. So, you know, the idea that he didn't know that people would react this way, or he didn't know that this you know, was actually going to be discriminatory, certainly seems, at least on the face, to be a complete joke. Like I said before, previous to the show today, you know, part of me believes it's that Fox News bubble, or that conservative bubble, where the only thing that they ever hear is other people that believe exactly how they believe. Say, oh, this is a great idea, you know, we really need this, and this is how we're going to be able to deal with these issues. And they don't stop to think that, hey, you know what, you do realize that there's other people out here that are probably going to be really pissed about this. They're not going to be okay with dealing with this issue in this manner. You know, the NCAA has been silent, I think, so far about it, but they could, you know, easily decide not to do their Final Four there going forward, even though that's their headquarters. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen. You know, there's been a lot of backlash. And then today, he said that he's going to back an amendment to this religious freedom law, clarifying that it does not allow businesses to deny service to anyone. And he's going to use I never intended to discriminate against anybody, rhetoric that he was using. So I don't know if you folks saw his interview with George Stephanopoulos over the weekend. George really let him have it. I mean, and George Stephanopoulos did it in a very calm George kind of way, where he just keeps asking the question, you know, does this discriminate? This is discriminating against gay people. What would you do if this happened? You know, and I know that Mike Pence, they were talking about Mike Pence looking to run for president. Like he was looking to throw his hat in the ring for president. Yeah, you know, that's going to be a really, really, really crowded clown car at this point. But anyway, so he didn't think about any of this and prior, and you know, I don't really understand the point about the law. You know, I kind of read through it earlier about this so-called religious freedom law that does really, you know, he's trying to walk it back and say it's exactly what, Barack Obama voted for in 2007. Well, no, it's not. It's not okay. Anywhere near that. It's just a bunch of BS. But I mean, it did. It literally this law gave people, a business owner, the right to say, you know what, I don't want you in my store, or I'm not gonna make a cake for you for your wedding because you're gay, or however they wanted to look at it. We're not gonna serve the gay couple in a restaurant because it's against our religious beliefs. And they gave them that right. The law did give them that ability, you know, because why else?
Yeah.
What would the law mean if it didn't mean that? You know, I mean, it would be what was suddenly, and you know, for me, my question is, what religious freedom didn't you have? The freedom to be a bigot?
Right.
Because I don't understand what religious freedom, how is a gay person eating your cake if that seems to be the, you know, the example everybody's using is the Christian baker forced to make a cake for a gay couple. How is making a cake for a gay couple against your religion?
Well,
I'm a little confused.
But I'm Heidi.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. what were you saying?
And the whole cake, and the guy basically was like, well, the baker has to bake the cake, but he doesn't have to write congratulations on it. It's like, so you're drawing a line. I'll make you a cake, but I don't have to write congratulations. I can put whatever I want to because it's freedom of speech. Doesn't matter that you paid for it.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'm not discriminating.
No, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And it's not a parsing. Now you're just trying to. Mm-hmm. Then what are you doing? There's no reason to.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe somebody else can explain it to me why this is such a. It just again, it to me, it's a. Here, I'm going to give me a reason to be a bigot, and I have now a reason to be a bigot because now you're.
Yeah, I mean that's what they want. But can I make one of my real, you know, to show that there is a light on the tunnel for our side of the fence on this? Want to make one of my Dave wacky analogies that I don't know if you remember, I don't know, in some past show that, you know, I went way back to like the Vietnam War and when it was the factory workers and the union guys protesting the war, in addition to the kids. That's when things changed. And I mean, I think you see here, you see like Charles Barkley coming out and criticizing the law. And I think the NCAA may have spoken out a bit more than you thought, Heidi. And this week, the governor of Connecticut said he doesn't want any state employees going to Indiana on state business. If there's a conference there, they can't go. So, I mean, I really do think, you know, the tide is turning and people aren't going to put up with that crap anymore.
What would be interesting would be to see if any of the athletes, and I'm just going to say probably not because it's so under the thumb of the NCAA, but if it was a pro, I mean, maybe the NBA still going on? I don't know.
Yeah, NBA still going on. The Pacers are from the end.
If members of, I mean, it would be. I mean, these college players really don't understand how much.
Well, I think it's kind of like too soon, too late. With the damn Final Four only being a week away, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, if they showed up, I don't know, with their fists raised or wore rainbow ribbons on their jerseys or something like that, which would probably give them sanctions and make them lose their scholarships. But the pros can certainly make some kind of statement like they did with
Michael Brown,
the Michael Brown incidents. There's always.
I mean, you always get these.
There's got to be a John Carlos moment. But these kids, these so-called student athletes, I don't know if they realize how much economic power they had. If they all band together and refuse to play,
right?
They generate so much money for these schools, and they don't see a dime of it. And if they just stop playing, and you saw in Oklahoma, at least one, maybe more, prospects declined to go play at Oklahoma after that.
Yeah.
Frat song, and then the whole football team, you know, staged, including the coach, you know, staged some sort of protest. But these kids really have, if they organized and hung together, they really have a lot of economic power. If they would just, suppose all four of the Final Four refused to play because of that. They're not required by law to play.
No, they're not. Three out of the four teams did come out and say pretty much, you know, they need to be, you know, that equality needs to be the lesson here, not inequality. The only team that hasn't said anything, at least from what I just saw, was Kentucky. So Michigan State, Wisconsin, and Duke. Yeah, and Duke was the first one, which kind of made me go, oh, okay. Only because I'm not a big, huge Duke fan. and that goes back to the Christian Leitner days for me, but which was a long time ago. So those three teams, the colleges came out and said this was not okay. The only one who hasn't said anything yet is Kentucky, and I don't know. I mean, does that mean they don't care, or does that mean they're just slower than the other three? I don't know.
In Kentucky, basketball is their religion. Whenever it was the last time they won the NCAA tournament, I had to go to Lexington for work. It was a good 2 weeks. It was like towards it was like the middle of April, so it would have been about 2 weeks after the final game. And you would think that that was the only thing that ever happened in the history of the world, because it's all they talked about on the news. There were billboards. There were people wearing Kentucky T-shirts. The office, mm-hmm. every office and cubicle was plastered with Kentucky posters and logos, and it was really weird. And you turn on the local news, and they're still talking about it. Like, you know, the team is going to be at this place, you know, signing autographs, and you know, you can buy your commemorative T-shirts here. And like nothing, it was like nothing else was going on in the news but the fact that the University of Kentucky won a basketball tournament 2 weeks ago. So it doesn't surprise me that they didn't have anything to say about that.
Yeah, Kentucky won in 2012 against the Kansas State.
That's when it was, I just remember it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff, if you have a second, I have a little local news that you might enjoy.
Sure.
This morning I was at the gym, so I didn't hear the actual voice, though there was captioning, and Robert Kraft was on the witness stand in the Aaron Hernandez murder trial.
Oh.
And he did not look confident and comfortable. He seemed, if you want to see like an athletic figure that you don't like squirm, you would have been in your element. And why the guy was stupid enough to talk about the murder with Hernandez after it happened, I mean, you know, well, he told me he was innocent. Why the fuck did you ask him? I mean, why didn't you stay away from it with a 10-foot pole? But
well,
I guess
that's not even evidence. That's.
But I mean, why? I mean, why Kraft was dumb enough to even get involved
was he
with, you know,
on behalf of the defense as a character witness?
I know. So, I don't know. I really don't know what it was. Now that you mention it, I mean, I think it was the prosecute. Both sides questioned him, and. Yeah, what it really has to do with it, you know, and then they were asking him all stuff about the guy's contract and stuff. I mean, it looks like the Hernandez trial may go on for as long as the Boston Marathon trial, which makes a hell of a lot of sense in terms of which was more important. More people died in the marathon than died.
Well, I think the marathon trial is ready to wrap up because the defense rested today.
It is
closing arguments.
But how the Hernandez thing is dragging out longer than the marathon, I really don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be as long as the OJ trial.
I don't
know. So I was going to say, Dave, what he said was, this is what it says, is he met with Hernandez and you know, looked him in the eye, or told him to look him in the eye and tell him he's innocent. And he said, Hernandez told him that he hoped the time of Lloyd's death came out because Hernandez had been at a club that night. And so that's what, you know, that's what he's saying, is he told Kraft that he was at a club. And so one of the CNN analysts think that that's explosive testimony, because now Aaron Hernandez lied to his boss, and the only way that you can rebut it if you put Hernandez on the stand, which would never happen.
They got a million things that point to the timeline, all showing Hernandez, you know, easily could have done it, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, you know, somebody, I mean, obviously Kraft didn't make billions of dollars before he even bought the Patriots by business.
Right.
An idiot, you know. But, you know, why he would even get involved with this, you know, why he even asked them, I mean, why he didn't just shun them you know, with a 10-foot pole the second it happened, you know, you really got to wonder, you know.
I've been following the trial a little bit with the girlfriend that got rid of the evidence and Jeff, are you following it? Because I don't know, did you know that Hernandez's fiance is the sister of the murder victim that he's on trial for? So the sisters are, you know, I'm assuming talking, because one of the sisters is Hernandez's fiance, the other one is the...
Happens to be on. I'm not really following it that closely.
Yeah, it's really, you know, because obviously if you are a football fan, you know who Aaron Hernandez is, and not to go back to CNN again, but they did have an hour special about Aaron Hernandez's life. I didn't realize that his life was kind of like a little ugly. His dad died, and he was really close to his dad, and then he got into some serious trouble. I forgot that he had some brushes with the law prior to the time that he got into the NFL. So he had some serious, you know, what you would consider serious problems. But I mean, this, you know, there's video of him carrying a gun around. They're trying to say it's a cell phone. That washes with anybody on the jury. I can't imagine it does. And then supposedly his girlfriend got rid of the gun, although I think I read, and I could be wrong, it's not on the article I'm looking at, but didn't she say that the bag that they see her on video getting rid of actually has, like, pot in it because it smells skunky? She said that she didn't get rid of a gun or something like that. So, I don't know. I'm wondering.
Yeah,
I'm wondering where it's going to go. I mean, the evidence that I hear, because I'm obviously not watching the trial, sounds pretty, you know. I mean, a lot of this stuff seems kind of cut and dried, but, of course, I'm not watching the trial itself. You know, so you don't know how it plays. And, you know, it could always go the OJ route. I mean, it could. So are you watching it? Are you interested in it, Dave?
Not excessively. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I just thought from day one the guy was guilty as hell. And, I'm not particularly... you know, interested in reading these long articles every day. He had a fairly good, you know, beginning of a career, but I've never heard any even ardent football fan around here show any sympathy for him. I mean, I think the local public has decided he's guilty, whether that means that'll hold up in court. I mean, I don't see that well of sympathy, you know, that OJ got. Maybe that's a changing time, but, you know, you look back, you know, in that OJ acquittal, you know, and black college and black law students jumping up cheering that he got off.
Right.
I mean, really pretty chilling when you think about it. And
I think, I don't think that's going to happen here.
I think the OJ, it's just, you know, what I see is the OJ reaction. Well, first of all, you know, the prosecution was incompetent, and the defense was brilliant, and it just goes to show you, if you have a lot of money, you can buy the best defense. But, you know, the black community in Los Angeles had suffered so long under, you know, the fascist, racist LAPD. So what Johnny Cochran did, who was really, you know, a brilliant strategy, was to put the LAPD on trial. And it wasn't so, and it, you know, whether or not they believed if OJ did it or not, the fact that he got acquitted was that finally, like, there had been so many black, you know, men mostly that were railroaded by the LAPD and the LA justice system. There was finally a guy, a brother, who beat the rap, and I think that's what they were celebrating. I think it was just a whole pent up anger at the LAPD, and finally a victory where the LAPD were the losers, it's probably, you know, to me that fueled that celebration more than, you know, any kind of legal analysis of the verdict. I still think the verdict was correct, and that the prosecution didn't do their job in proving the case. But I think that the way that was, the way it was drawn down racial lines, and especially the reason for the celebration was so much that Johnny Cochran put the LAPD on trial and beat them for once. And for once a black man beat the LAPD in court. So it was like a cathartic eruption of whether it was justice or not, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And I also think the Las Vegas thing was a do-over. I think if he hadn't had that other, that inconvenient, murder thing hanging over his head, I don't think he would have gone to jail for that, whatever it is he did in Las Vegas.
Yeah, the Vegas thing is very weird.
I kind of always hold out hope that the way the OJ thing ended up will eventually affect George Zimmerman. One of his small screw ups, will get him the punishment that murdering Trayvon Martin never got him. But
yeah,
I don't know if that'll happen.
He is stupid enough to get himself into situations where sooner or later it'll happen. It might not happen tomorrow, but at some point it will. I agree, and I think it's almost inevitable unless he decides to keep a low profile, which he hasn't.
Well, he just came out a couple of weeks ago and decided to blame. What, he blamed race, the reaction on President Obama or some bull crap?
Yeah, race relations have
so because race relations are bad, it's all Obama's fault, of course. That's why he had such a backlash. It's like, and I think that there's a lot of truth in the, hopefully karma or whatever you want to call it, comes to bite them in the ass. The OJ thing is weird. The one of the guys that was in that hotel room was his agent, OJ's agent, that had this stuff that he had given him. And because I actually read the agent, by the way, is, when you want to talk about birds of a feather, the agent and OJ were made for each other. They were both slimy and, but it. If you ever get a chance to read the agent's book about what happened, it's kind of interesting insofar as, it was kind of known, it was kind of understood that OJ did kill his wife. Like they knew it. They knew that he probably did it, and they didn't really do anything about it. They didn't stop him, or they didn't go to the authorities and tell them what they thought until it was way too late, and it didn't matter. So. With the paraphernalia or whatever it was that he was selling in the in the hotel room that OJ, was finally convicted of whatever his charges were.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those things that everything just came full circle for him. But I know we're getting a little far afield of what we started out with, but that's okay.
That's all right.
It's like the ADD. So, it's the ADD show. We have attention deficit. That's okay.
I just want to, like, one thing about this Indiana thing, like, first of all, to me, like, turning down business would be against my religion.
Okay.
Unless I found that the customer just, you know, didn't appeal to me, I would find some way to turn them down. But, like, suppose I'm a baker, right? And a guy comes in and says, you know, we're having a Kristallnacht celebration party, and you know, we want the cake decorated with swastikas to celebrate Kristallnacht.
Right.
And I would say, no, I'm not going to do that. If I lived in Indiana, would I then have to prove that I was Jewish?
Right.
That's against my religion, or is it just the fact that it's against my sensibilities that I just don't want to serve an asshole?
The funniest thing is, I mean, I've done all kinds of business, you know, banking, all kinds of stuff where you have customers that are just vile human beings. You know, but you still deal with them. You know, one of the worst customers I ever had when I worked as a banker. You know, where I actually have an office and I see customers. The most vile human being, rich like you wouldn't believe, just an a-hole. But I had a, you know, he's probably one of my best customers as far as the money he spent, if you will look at it that way. He's a vile human being, just awful. He wasn't racist or sexist. He was just an awful human being. He was just a rude prick, rude to everybody, obnoxious. He made one of my employees cry once, just awful. And, you know, I mean, I guess I could have said, yeah, you're not coming back, but, you know, he's making us money. He's making us a lot of money. What do you do?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't know. I know people who are small business owners. I don't know many of them who would turn away business. I really don't. No matter what their business is, whether it's, you know, you need the revenue. Whether it's a restaurant or a garage or a shoe store or what, it doesn't matter what it is. You want the. I mean, I don't know many small business owners or big businesses really that can say, you know what, I don't want this type of customer. I only want these types
unless
of customers.
Unless the customer is disruptive, like,
right.
Loud and obnoxious in a public place or
right.
I'm watching
right.
Nancy Grace now. If he's right. Video taking pictures of women in the dressing room at Target, which some guy in
right.
Pennsylvania just got caught doing. I don't want that customer
right.
in my store.
Right. Right.
But for the most part, and there was a guy I heard, I don't know, about a month ago, a lawyer, of course, who, you know, just you know, as a lark, went into a bakery and said, which he knew was a gay-friendly bakery, and said, he wanted a cake, and he wanted I hate fags fags to be put on the cake.
Uh-huh.
You may have heard the story, and the baker said, no, I'm not going to do that. She said, he goes, well, you have to serve me. And she said, well, I'll make you the cake. I will give you the pastry bag, and I'll give you the icing. And you can write that thing yourself, but I'm not going to write it. You know? But he sued her anyway. I don't know what the outcome of that lawsuit was, but that is something that happened. And there'll probably be more stuff like that.
Well, you know, and you know, there's, I mean, with that, you know, working in where you're, you know, see customers, literally see them, you know, customers every day, I can tell you honestly that I have thrown people out because of their behavior. I had a customer once that came in and started to scream, and when I say scream, I don't mean actually raise their voice about it, but literally started complaining about all the Hispanics, except they didn't use the word Hispanics, in the neighborhood, and started to, you know, disparage this particular group of people. Now, not only am I not a prejudiced asshole, but I have employees that are Hispanic that can hear this person or would walk by and hear this person. Yeah. I have customers that are also Hispanic that I would not want this person, to offend. And so I made the decision, you know what, you're not allowed to say it in this branch, you're going to have to leave. And I'm not going to serve you because you are being, I didn't say this, but you're being an asshole. So yeah. I'm not going to deal with you, you're going to leave. And I am taking the fact that all these people that I, you know, that I work with, that I respect, that I, you know, I'm taking their feelings way over your ridiculous attitude, and I don't really care what happens to me if I get blowback. And I didn't get any blowback, but I'm kicking you out, and you're not coming back. I don't want to see you here again because of your obnoxiousness. Now, granted, nothing happened to me, but there, you know, it could have, I guess. But you know, so I mean, if you say, well, yeah. Am I, you know, should I suck it up and deal with the person and just nod my head and go, you know, just let them say whatever they want? I mean, I'm sure there's people who would fall on the other side and say, well, yeah, you have to help them. It doesn't matter what they say. Well, okay, that's easy to say in a bubble, but when you have customers and employees, they're disparaging,
there's a difference between throwing somebody out because of how they're behaving and or throwing them out because of who they are, you know.
Right.
That's the difference.
Right. You know,
these people have, they have, you know, these bakers, these Christian bakers are, and florists and wedding photographers are so afraid that the gay couple is going to, you know, right in the middle of their wedding planning, they'll, you know, start having anal sex in the lobby of the bakery. So that's what these guys are so obsessed with. They're obsessed with that, as opposed, you know, they don't just they don't see them as just people. But I don't have anything else to say about that. Can we? If you don't mind, Dave, if you don't feel like talking about it, that's fine. Just say so. But can we talk about your appearance on TV last night? Can you step up to the? Do you mind?
And Dave, you're back on. I put you back on just so you know you're not on hold any longer. Okay, go on.
That's okay. Yeah, one phone to the other. Happens every week.
Did they approach you or did you approach them?
Yeah.
Well, actually, the news station will post an article about this woman's death.
Did you want me to tell a story about the woman?
Yes, you want.
So, and the reason I'm going to explain the woman thing is the case that why he was on TV last night is because I'm a crazy obsessed news junkie, so I'm going to explain it. We're very close to the University of Minnesota. It's like 3 miles away. And on Friday night, a 22-year-old woman left a bar by the University of Minnesota, left the bar, and never got to her sorority. The police were called, obviously, several hours later. They found her purse about a block and a half or so away from the sorority, which is about 3 blocks where the purse was about 3 blocks from the bar. so they started to look for her, and I thought it was kind of strange that there didn't seem to be the level of, oh my God, we got to find her, as there had been previously. Well, we found out yesterday that there's video of her jumping, although they're not using that word, but we know what they're saying, really, jumping from the 10th Avenue Bridge into the Mississippi River. Now, there's nobody around her. There's no, you know, no possibility. At least on camera, there's nobody around this, you know, telling her to go in the river. And to get into the river on top of the 10th Avenue Bridge, you have to make a concerted effort to go over the bridge. You don't.
It's not something you accidentally fall over, like a railing or something.
And it's knocking high up. So what, like two stories, three stories, would you say? So 60 to 70 feet above the river. So we're not, you know, 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, we know where this is going. So they figured out that that's what happened. Later we found out other information, but so that's how Dave got called, was because of the suicide aspect of the story.
Okay.
So
yeah, on the website they had actually put, you know, a warning sign of suicide, and also what you can do to help someone who's struggling. So one of my board members, Lindsay, reached out to the news organization and said, thank you for properly reporting this and getting the warning signs. They reached back out to her, couldn't get a hold of her right away because we're all volunteers and she's at work. So then they called me because I answer the local chatter's phone number on my cell phone. I said, hey, you know, we're trying to reach Lindsay to see if she'll be on the news. And then
Dave got to go on because Lindsay's just had a baby.
Just two sort of news for her, you know. So I'm on the board of the news because they reached out to us, actually. So right out there in rush hour, it's about a half an hour drive without traffic.
On a good day.
I go in, nervous as hell. I know the topic, I don't know the subject, but nervous as hell. Meet the lead reporter. Nice guy. I mean, actually, everybody there was really nice. And so I sat in the green room for about 15 minutes before I went in, just trying to calm my nerves and just talking to the producer guy who I was with. So we go in, and it's kind of a strange setup. I've never been on the news before, so the whole thing was just kind of fascinating. The whole time I'm nervous. Because there's only five of us actually in the newsroom. The reporter, the weather guy, the floor manager, the producer, and myself. All the cameras are remote control. I did not know this. But so I was on for a few minutes. We talked about the warning signs of suicide, what you can do if you feel that someone's about to take their own life. Also, we talked about why suicide is the number two reason for death amongst college students. And then, again, we kind of went over the warning signs again. And the whole interview was just a few minutes. And to be honest, I still haven't even seen it yet because I was doing it live.
Yeah. Right? Yes. And the, you know, I didn't even think of it. And tape the thing, so I didn't even tape it. I watched it, I didn't tape it. But, yeah, so it's problematic. They asked about, I was going to say, they asked about the warning signs, and, you know, they don't want to talk about the specific case. So they didn't want to talk about this. Yeah. They didn't want to talk about the German Wings thing either because, you know, they just, it's just kind of an, you know, they're both very ugly subjects. So.
I guess also that it shows a highly structured and under a tight schedule, so if they're going to get somebody on, then it's going to get them, you know, in and out, and that's characteristic of any, you know, news. Again, you know, I mean, they probably spend less time talking about weather and traffic and more time focusing on topics that are, you know, of interest to the listeners. We could revisit this, like we did last year. That was a great discussion we had last year. But if I could just your opinion with these kind of things. Like I've known three people personally who have taken their own lives, and in all three cases, as horrifying and traumatizing as it was to hear the news, I wasn't surprised. So, and now we're hearing about this guy, this pilot, airline, that now he was the president of Lufthansa, I think, just came out today and said that this guy now has, he had shown tendencies, or there were red flags that he was a suicide risk. And probably if you talk to any of his colleagues, that are around, they probably weren't surprised. They'd be shocked at the manner in which he chose to take his life. But they probably wouldn't be surprised that he did it. So it comes back to like Germany has very strict privacy laws. So how do you more strict than our own HIPAA laws? But how do you balance? And I think I said it before. There was a guy in that I worked with that killed his wife and himself on the weekend. And everybody was traumatized on Monday, when we came in, but nobody was surprised because everybody knew there was something wrong. So, but just, whatever it is that set him off, it could have happened. It could have happened on a weekday. He may have had his gun in his glove compartment of his car, and he could have run in and come out and started shooting. How do you balance a person's privacy about their health issues with public safety, like public safety in the workplace, or like big public safety, like in the thing like an airline where they really have more of a duty of public safety, like they. In hindsight, they should have grounded this guy, but they didn't. What are your thoughts on that?
I think for public safety, people should be screened on a regular basis, like pilots, engineers, truck drivers, anybody who could be a risk or potentially cause a risk to others. And that are in a high or a potentially high job that could cause a lot of damage or inflict a lot of harm. Police officers, paramedics, right. A lot of these people I think should be screened on a regular basis.
I mean, the problem, and I've been watching about this plane thing a lot more than most people. One of the things they're saying is, they do have screening, but they also have screening that happens once a year. But it's literally just a, like when you go into the doctor and they, they hand you the, how are you feeling? What issues do you have? And, do you have a back pain? Do you have stomach pain? And you check off the marks. Do you have, and on theirs it's pretty much the same. I think it was like 140 things. Do you have any of these ailments? Check the box. Heart issue, depression, so that's what you would do. You would, is it severe? Is it not severe? But, I mean, that's really that. And they were saying the other thing that they do is other pilots, will see that, you're acting strange. But the problem is none of these people and this guy, this co-pilot, It's not like you see him every day. So if you are a pilot and that's a co-pilot, you might see him once every 3 months. You don't see him every day. He goes to wherever somebody needs a co-pilot. And so that, you know, that's all, that's what happens. And so just because, so I don't know how you would be able to know that he's going downhill if you see him once every 3 months. They were saying that day that there was a note from the doctor that was written that was ripped up in the house that was saying that he can't go to work because he's got problems. So then that goes back just, I think, to the, so shouldn't the doctor call up the airline and say, hey, this guy's got to be grounded. He's got some serious issues. You can't let him on the plane. We're taken out of the hands of the guy that, you know, and, you know, the sad thing is they've been showing a lot of stuff on the co-pilot. Like, he loved to fly. Like, it was a thing. You know, when they show him on a glider when he was, like, 16 years old. You know, and so this was, like, his thing. This was his dream. This is what he wanted to do. So it was like his life was to fly. And, you know, and that could have been part of, and we don't know, of course, but it could be part of the whole thing. If I can't fly, I want to end it. But the taking 149 people with him, you know, that's a big problem. That's obviously something so ugly and so horrific. You know, 99% of people who kill themselves kill only themselves. They don't kill other people.
Right.
This is a mass murder.
Yeah, and this is, you know, and I mean, that was just completely awful. But, you know, I heard that there was a possibility that there had been a girlfriend he broke up with recently, and so there was other things going on. But and he had an episode in 2009 where he took a month off because he had a severe psychological episode, and that's what they called it. They referred to it as a severe psychological episode. So, but it's not known exactly what that means. You know, so what do you? Where does public safety begin and your privacy end?
But I think in the case of being a pilot, public safety has to come into play.
Right, but where do you, you know, what? So, and I can, I mean, to play devil's advocate for a minute, I can see where that could be. So, what, I'm depressed. So, if I'm depressed, when does my depression become a problem? If I'm a pilot and I have depression, when does that depression become an issue? Are you, you know, and going to the, you know, tonight we were talking about discrimination. So now, am I going to be discriminated against because other people that have had depression in the past have done something? How can you say that I'm going to hurt somebody if I've never hurt anybody before? Taking my own life, if that's what I, you know, at some point do, really doesn't necessarily mean I'm a bad pilot or a good pilot. It doesn't have anything to do with that 99% of the time, or, you know, where does public safety and my privacy mesh? And you know, the interesting thing is they were talking about, this is probably the 10th plane crash where the possibility of suicide is probably the most likely factor of the crash, not mechanical, not weather related, none of that. This is number 10 in, like, I think 40 years.
Right.
So it's happened.
Sean, commercial airlines, not things like 9/11 or the guy who flew into the building.
Right. Not taking 9/11. Not even looking at 9/11. I'm just saying.
It's just ordinary commercial flight, and then the pilot decides he's going to take the plane down.
Right, and one of them, there wasn't anybody on the. It was a plane that was not like a Cessna, so it was a plane that could have carried more passengers, but there wasn't anybody on where the guy killed himself in the plane. He didn't kill anybody else. But it was a bigger commercial plane that he took.
I think it was maybe
a cargo. This was like 20-ish years ago. But there was the Air Egypt plane There were
notorious.
Yeah. So there was a several others that were recent, more recent, where they one. I'll have to look it up. I can look it up too. But there was one where the co-pilot figured out that there were people on board. I think this was one. This was Moroccan Air, I think. There were people on board that were from the government, and he was really angry with this particular branch of that government. And so it was pretty much fuck you, I'm going to kill you. And he took I think that was a story that was similar to this, where he locked the pilot out and he slammed the plane down because he was angry with the passengers that were government officials. And so it was like he was so angry with them that he was, that was his thing. So, this is number 10. This, the German Wings airplane is number 10 as far as where they believe that suicide is probably the factor of the, where do you go? How do you find a happy medium between
someone who has the rest of it can be managed versus somebody who's.
So how do you know that? How do you know that for sure?
But you err on the side of caution and safety.
Right.
Or do you err on the individual's rights?
And what's the answer? I'm sure all three of us probably have a different response, right? All three of us have a different answer.
Yeah.
What's most important? Again, argue on both sides. If I have depression, how can you tell me that I'm going to kill you? How can you assume that I'm going to take this plane and run it into a mountain? That doesn't necessarily mean I'm ever going to do that.
No.
But then you can play the other side. Well, you have depression, and we've had these issues before. I don't want you being my pilot, because if you're having a really bad day, and people that have depression sometimes have really bad days, I don't want that really bad day to be the day that I'm sitting in the back and you're running my plane into a mountain, so I can see both sides.
Yeah.
I don't know what the right, you know.
To me, I think public safety has to come first.
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I think that there's got to be better guidelines for doctors.
Right.
I just read in Germany, a doctor can actually go to prison if he releases private health information about a patient.
Yeah.
They do have, how much of a duty, sidetrack for a moment. About 10 years ago, my dad had a seizure and was in a car accident.
Ooh.
The doctor said, no driving for 6 months. And I went to see the cops to get the police report, and I said, how can I keep him off the road? And he told me what the options were. I said, does the doctor have any duty by law to contact the motor vehicle? He said, no. Under New Jersey state law, the neurologist has no obligation to contact motor vehicle and say, this guy shouldn't be driving. Technically, he was only under doctor's orders on his honor not to drive, and under threat of arousing the wrath of my brother and sister and me, and my mother, who was alive at the time. It was the only reason he stayed off the road. But legally, he could still drive. I don't know. I don't know what you do. Maybe something that companies, especially airlines, people that public have a lot of people's lives in their hands on a regular basis, have to have rules to go by.
Right.
So, all right, we got 5 minutes left. Any closing remarks? I really enjoyed last week's show, by the way, the Hillary show. And I hope everybody else did too.
Yes. It's a very interesting. I mean, it's a very interesting subject. It's a very. I mean, people are on, you know, on both sides, and nobody wants to give it up. So it's kind of, it can be volatile, but it's a very interesting topic. We might have to revisit that if and when she decides to throw her hat in the ring.
If we get some, and also to anybody who's listening, and Mr. Hamilton too, encourage your friends to listen to the. Listen to the show, and encourage people. If you have a story to tell, but far and away, our most successful shows have been not these kind of shows. As much as we enjoy doing them, our most successful shows have been where we have a guest who has a story to tell.
Yep.
For example, when we had Diane do the unemployment show, we had Alex do the cancer show, when we had Dave, you guys doing the suicide show, when we did that baseball show with Brian, that got about 200 hits.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, when we have a person with a story to tell, those are our most successful shows, because like the guest also has an interest in having people listen to them, and he or she shares the link to the show. You know, we get a lot of listens to the replay. So
nice.
If anybody has a story they want to tell, hit us up, because I don't care what it is. And, you know, we want to talk to you. And maybe one of these days we'll come up with something that we vehemently disagree on, and we can scream and yell at each other for an hour, and call each other names, and you know,
Minnesota versus New Jersey.
Oh God, we're gonna do like some sort of an obnoxious Bill O'Reilly show.
Right, right. But and so anyway, that's my two cents. So I'll sign off for us. Say good night, and I'll hand it over.
Cool. Yes, we have about 2 minutes left, so yeah, I don't have much else to say this evening. I'm assuming that Arkansas is going to sign their legislation for the Bigot Act.
The Bigot Bill.
So we'll see what happens with that. Walmart's already come out against it, so they're going to go against their biggest employer in the state of Arkansas if they decide to if Asia Hutchinson decides to sign the bill. So we'll see. Next week we still up in the air as far as what we're going to do. I think so. This weekend, the Easter. Yes. So if anybody celebrates Easter. Happy Easter, for anybody that's an atheist.
It's also Passover.
Yes. I'm sorry. I forgot about Passover. Sorry. My mistake.
Don't forget to refrain from washing people's foreheads coming up.
What? Oh, no, that's already happened. Ash Wednesday was already. That happened weeks ago. Yeah. The atheist in the family knows more. Yeah.
Before Easter.
Easter, Passover, nice weekend, whatever. So everybody have a great weekend, and we will see you or hear you next Tuesday. Bye.
Okay. Good night.
See you later. Bye.
Yeah.